Hello and welcome to the MJA podcast. My name is Kate Swanell and I am the journal's news and online editor. Today our topic is diabetic foot disease and how we can find ways of reducing amputation rates in Australia. Dr. Peter Lazzarini is co-chair of Diabetic Foot Australia and he's also principal research fellow at Queensland University of Technology. He is the lead author of a perspective published in the MJA on DFD and he is my special guest today. What is diabetic foot disease and what causes it? What are the mechanisms involved?
Historically, the technical definition is essentially infection, ulceration or destruction of tissues of the foot associated with the diabetes complications of peripheral neuropathy and or peripheral arterial disease. People with diabetes have a simpler, more contemporary definition is simply a foot ulcer, infection or ischemia in someone with diabetes.
So is it a circulation problem?
Circulation is part of the problem. However, probably the more critical problem is the peripheral neuropathy, which is nerve damage, essentially getting down into the extremities. So peripheral neuropathy causes a lack of sensation, pain, pressure and temperature. And that's traditionally our flag of humans are telling us something's wrong in our lower extremity or anywhere, really. Without that, bodies tend to not heal as correctly as we otherwise would have, but also not do anything about it. Well, the pain's a big factor. Unfortunately, the demographic that most affected by diabetic foot disease is 50 to 70-year-old men for a number of reasons. But unfortunately, men, and I probably speak for myself as well, aren't as good as getting off and getting care. And if there's no pain involved as well, they tend to delay it even more so.
How prevalent is it in Australia?
Sorry, that's a really great question. In terms of prevalence, there's around a quarter of everyone with diagnosed diabetes has a risk factor for diabetic foot disease. Risk factors that peripheral neuropathy or feeling or peripheral arterial disease called perfusion. So that's around 300,000 in Australia with risk factors for diabetic foot disease. Yeah, there's a lot of people. In terms of who's got diabetic foot disease, around 4% of people with diabetes. So that's 50,000 Australians walking around today with a foot ulcer infection or ischemia. We also know that about 1%. In fact, 12,500 people in Australia have had a previous amputation. And from that group, that 50,000 in particular, unfortunately each year we see around 22,000 hospitalisations, 4,500 amputations and 1,700 deaths. It causes a lot of complications and causes a significant burden of disease on society. But when you actually compare those to the thousands of other health conditions, it becomes even worse, unfortunately. So diabetic foot disease is the leading cause of all amputations, top 10 cause of all disability, top 20 cause of hospitalisation, and has mortality rates worse than many cancers, unfortunately.
Is it getting the attention it needs?
It is something that we need to get more awareness, A, around the burden of disease that it causes, and then B, to get more action to try and drive that burden down. And that's one of the reasons we developed last year with the new Australian diabetes-related foot disease strategy, which is the subject of the MJA Perspectives article.
Do we know in dollar terms what diabetic foot disease causes to our healthcare system?
Yeah, so unfortunately not only does it cost a lot of time, limbs, resources and lives, unfortunately it costs an estimated $1.6 billion. We did some work on this a couple of years ago in Australia in terms of direct costs. And around a third of that is inpatient care and about two-thirds is outpatient care. Now, that's around 1% to 2% of the health budget. That's unusual around the world. And in England, it's around $1 billion, which is about 1% of the health budget. In Canada, it's $1.5 billion. In the States, it's $9 billion.
I'm assuming that a coordinated care pathway or a multidisciplinary team is the best way to go about preventing amputations. Is that fair?
That is very fair. So multidisciplinary care is perhaps never more important than in diabetic foot disease. And we know that multi-sector care is also critically important for diabetic foot disease. Nations with systems or regions with systems that have integrated care when it comes to primary prevention care, secondary prevention care, and also tertiary treatment care, and then integrating the multiple disciplines that are required, particularly for diabetic foot disease, that surgeons, medicos, podiatrists, nurses, etc. Only then we start to see reductions in the burden of disease when it comes to diabetic foot disease. And we say that diabetic foot disease is a little bit like the canary in the mine of the health system, because if you haven't got the integrated care between primary, secondary, and tertiary, and the multidisciplinary integration across those levels, then you don't get the improved outcomes when it comes to diabetic foot disease.
Does Australia have the resources for these coordinated care pathways?
Yes and no. For example, in other countries, in the UK and Europe, where the diabetes amputation rates are the best in the world, they have processes to incentivise, reimburse and monitor screening of patients to see if they've got risk factors for diabetic foot disease, and then preventative services for people with risk factors for diabetic foot disease. They've got accredited services and systems for multidisciplinary diabetic foot disease teams and people with diabetic foot disease, and they monitor them. So, for example, in Australia, we know that less than 50% of people with diabetes have a foot screen each year. That should be around 100%, but in Europe and the UK, it's over 80%. In terms of preventative services, unfortunately, MBS doesn't cover many of the preventative services that we need in secondary care, like custom-made footwear and increased surveillance to prevent diabetic foot disease, where in other countries they've incentivised that. And then the big one, which is the interdisciplinary and multidisciplinary diabetic foot disease teams, we've just launched an accreditation system through the National Association of Diabetes Centres. But in countries like Germany, this has been going on for a number of years, and they've got 300-odd multidisciplinary services. And in fact, in the UK, and they complain that 20% of their hospitals don't have diabetic foot disease teams, and we'd struggle to have 20% that do in Australia. The bad and good news is that a number of states have started to improve the integration of the levels of care, particularly between secondary and tertiary care, such as Queensland and WA, where they've incentivised access to care and track quality of care and look at the outcomes. And we've seen reductions in the order of 50 to 70% in terms of diabetic foot disease hospitalisation and amputation rates across those states. So I know we can do it here in Australia when we do integrate. Simple solutions that we can potentially implement in Australia, particularly around MBS, monitoring MBS and perhaps some increased MBS items in this area that have the evidence to support them, that will start to deliver returns on investment when it comes to diabetic disease outcomes and costs.
What's the story for Indigenous Australians?
Very good point, Kate. So there was a really lovely systematic review done last year by a group in the University of Newcastle interrogated the data in this area, and they found that there's a 3 to 6-fold higher rate of diabetic foot disease in our Indigenous Australians, unfortunately. Now, this isn't, unfortunately, unusual for Indigenous peoples around the world. It's a similar sort of rate for in the US and Canada and New Zealand, but it shouldn't be that way.
Is that an access problem?
Now, access is one of the big reasons. So the short answer is we don't know exactly why this increased risk is evident in our Indigenous populations, but it seems to be a combination between genetics, higher prevalence of lifestyle sort of risk factors, access in particular, and quality of care, and particularly culturally appropriate care when they get that care. The good news is we've done studies here in Australia and internationally that where good access to care and good quality of care is implemented in large regions, people with large proportions that are Indigenous or from low socioeconomic background or remote, we found if patients get good quality of care and good access to care, they get good outcomes regardless of the Indigenous background, socioeconomic background, remoteness, etc. So the good news is if we improve the access to care and quality of care, things can improve in the Indigenous space. We've got some great programs around the country and pockets of the country that we need to roll that out, those out nationally to really sort of drive the amputation rates down in our Indigenous population.
I'm chatting today with Dr. Peter Lazzarini from Diabetic Foot Australia. His co-authored perspective can be found at mja.com.au. You mentioned that the cost of the healthcare system, it's about 1% of our healthcare costs. Is it getting 1% of the funding?
No.
I thought you might say that.
Yeah. So we don't know exactly how much is spent on diabetic foot disease in the country, but we know in terms of research, for example, well, we know that around 33% or up to 33% of all diabetes clinical costs are attributed to diabetic foot disease in the UK and the US, but in those same countries, only 0.2% of the research budgets are attributed, the diabetes research budget are attributed to diabetes complications, thus to diabetic foot disease from the diabetes research budget in those countries. In terms of in investing in preventative and treatment services, we certainly lack in Australia.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that bears itself out in increased costs and poor outcomes when it comes to hospitalisation and medication. The UK really leads the way in that respect, where they incentivise some of that preventative care and treatment care. Well, I'm saying that there's some good news. There's just recently in Queensland, the Queensland government is on the back of the Australian Diabetes related foot disease strategy and other pieces of evidence invested around $4 to $5 million a year in extra diabetic foot disease services. So there is green shoots out there, but we need governments to certainly have all persuasions to do more and more organisations to come on board as well if they're going to improve diabetic foot disease in this country.
So tell us a bit about Diabetic Foot Australia and the new strategies you've got for DFD.
So Diabetic Foot Australia was established, was funded in 2015 by a grant from the Wound Management Innovation Cooperative Research Centre, established to become the national peak body when it came to diabetic foot disease, because there hadn't been one for the last few years. And it was established with the goal of ending avoidable amputations in generation, because at that stage there was lots of publicity around, which was accurate, around Australia being the second worst country when it came to diabetes amputation rates in the developed world. There was the goal of ending avoidable amputations in a generation, but to do that it had two major objectives to fulfil, which was to optimise evidence-based clinical practice and to stimulate national collaborative research in diabetic foot disease as well. There was this multidisciplinary, multi-sector steering committee set up with experts from medicine, surgery, allied health, nursing, industry, science, clinical research, etc., that was targeting services and tools and techniques and advocacy for patients, health professionals, researchers and industry in this sphere. And on the back of that, Diabetic Foot Australia, which now is under the Australian Diabetes Society banner, has launched the Australian Diabetes Related Foot Disease Strategy, which puts into action some of these objectives and goals. And basically out of that, there's 9 key strategies to take, all around, 3 of them around access, improving access to care. Second, 3 are around improving quality to care when patients get there. And the last 3 is around stimulating research.
There's a fair few GPs listening to this. Is there a message in this for them in terms of what they should be doing if they have patients who are at risk for diabetic foot?
So GPs are absolutely critical to diabetic foot disease. The first and foremost, we need GPs or their practices to be screening all patients with diabetes each year for those risk factors, being peripheral neuropathy or peripheral arterial disease. If they identify peripheral arterial disease or peripheral neuropathy, their patients need to be referred for surveillance through podiatrists and nurses, so usually around quarterly. Those services will be doing is they'll be identifying what we call pre-ulcerative lesions, which is essentially callus on the feet of people with neuropathy that end up developing into ulcerations without treatment and care with footwear and offloading devices. But if they do identify diabetic foot disease itself, that's ulcers, infections or ischemia, to refer to the local multidisciplinary service if they have one, and they're becoming more readily available, fortunately, where they'll be cared for by teams of medicos, surgeons, podiatrists and nurses, all collaboratively working together to heal those ulcers up. And those ulcers take, on average, 4 to 8 weeks, but often 12 weeks to heal, so it's not a short-term proposition, and they'll need to be seen usually once or twice a week in those services to ensure that they're getting the care that they need to actually heal.
If you had a magic wand, Pete, what would you do first?
I would fund basically what's recommended in the guidelines. In fact, we published a paper a few years ago and things haven't changed that much, where we audited all the NHMRC recommendations for the care of people with diabetes complications. And what we found is that they were funded via MBS and or PBS for all complications except for diabetic foot, where only half of those recommendations were funded. And there's a number of reasons for that. Some of the treatments which have the level of evidence that is as good as the level of evidence in the other complications for drugs and various surgical procedures, they don't neatly fit into MBS and PBS categories. So moon boots, for example, cast walkers have the highest level of evidence to heal a diabetic foot ulcer. Unfortunately, that falls through the cracks of most funding schemes. Mm. If that was funded, that would probably be one of the best things we could do in Australia, is to improve access to moon boots for people with diabetic foot ulcers. And the second thing is obviously to vastly increase the number of interdisciplinary and multidisciplinary diabetic foot teams around the country. We estimate that about 10% of what we need, around 500, and we've got about 50. So we need significantly more in that area, and we should really start to consider these diabetic foot disease teams like we do dialysis, apply the same sort of level of care 2 or 3 times a week to heal up over a long period of time. So hospitals should perhaps perceive that for diabetic foot disease, that we need diabetic foot units, and those units are there to obviously keep people out of hospital preventing amputation, hopefully prolonging their life as well.
As you actually said, Kate, is it all about poor circulation at the end of the day? And that's the common misnomer when it comes to diabetic foot disease. Everyone thinks it's about poor circulation, whereas that's an aspect of it, but the critical factor is the poor feeling.
So GPs need to be screening for pain sensitivity.
Yes. Basically, to do that is we use what's called a 10-gram monofilament, which is essentially a piece of fishing line that, when bent, gives off 10 grams of pressure. When it's applied to or it's bent on the foot, a number of areas of the foot, if patients can't feel that 10-gram monofilament, then they're diagnosed with a loss of protective sensations. But it's that lack of, in patients like you or I who haven't got diabetic peripheral neuropathy, if we get a sore foot, we usually either get a little bit of callus, which is hard skin that protects that sore part of our foot, yep, until it becomes that sore. We need to do something about it. Or we change the way we walk without, yes, pain through peripheral neuropathy. They don't feel that pain. And what happens is the callus builds up and becomes what we call the preulcerative lesion, which is really thick callus, which causes significant pressure on the tissue underneath. And we end up with this subdermal inflammation, the hemorrhage, which becomes the ulcer itself. And that all comes from essentially that lack of feeling. We say that people had, unfortunately, a lot of people will walk into their multidisciplinary clinic or the GP service with a whopping great hole in their foot.
Yes.
And had no discomfort at all. And obviously a good sensation that would be incredibly sore and we'd do something about that.
Yeah.
We need to treat it like it's incredibly sore.
To ask a more complicated question, what's the mechanism in diabetes that causes neuropathy?
That is a very great question, Kate. Essentially, we don't know, but there's a lot of top things around various biochemical pathways. Some of it's microvascular disease, so essentially we can get damage to the small vessels, the microangiopathy. But also one of the big hypotheses is that we tend to develop when glucose is converting the glycogen to go into cells and it can't get there, it tends to develop glycogen-like products, sorbitol, et cetera, that becomes an osmolite that ends up in the myelin sheath of the nerves and damages the insulation around the nerves. So the nerves are a little bit long, they're a little bit like electrical cords, and the myelin sheath is a bit like insulation around it, and swell it up, and then it starts to degrade, and the signal can't get through. You get strange signals like tingling or tingling needles, et cetera. So the short answer is we don't really know, but we think it's a combination of microvascular disease, various biochemical pathways, and low-grade inflammation in various areas of the body, affecting the nerves in this case. The short answer with neuropathy is we don't know. We think there's a combination of factors, but we don't know yet. But unfortunately, what happens is that it's irreversible at this point in time.
All right, Peter. Thank you for your time.
Cheers. Thanks, Kate.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.